first guest for this evening is Jamelia. Hello.
Hi. Hi, love. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
You've been sat watching?
Yes, I have. I was up there.
Been having fun?
Oh, I've been absolutely loving it. Watching or listening to people say what you've been thinking aloud, and you're like, yes, it's not just me. I'm not weird. Yeah, it's been amazing. I just love the fact that you've done this. And, you know, congratulations to you. This is amazing. And thank you. Honestly.
Don't, because it's the last night and I'm already feeling a little bit emotional. So I can't guarantee I won't cry during this. Jamelia.
Yes.
Talk to me. What was your childhood like?
Do you know, my childhood was really fun. I grew up in Birmingham, very, very proud Brummy. And Birmingham is what I would describe as like a melting pot. So I had so many different experiences. I was immersed in so many different cultures and races, and it was just beautiful, a really lovely childhood. I didn't grow up with my dad, but my mom did what I would say was an amazing job, and I don't know how she did it. I really don't.
Did you have siblings?
I have two younger brothers, yes. And I also have two older brothers from my dad's side. A house full of music. And we had the Gladiators here, based in Birmingham.
No.
And and it was the
Man.
Best. Yeah. And my mum ran the local play centre. So we'd get free tickets every single week over the summer holidays. It was the best.
My God.
We also had this thing called the adventure game. Did anyone do that? Please don't tell me I'm alone in this. Oh my gosh, I've got to tell you about this. So the adventure game, you were given like a passport and it allowed you to kind of get on the bus, get on the train, but you had to get these stamps in it. You had to go to different venues, the Science Museum and whatever. And it was so fun. So every summer we did that. We have like so many kind of like nature kind of parks. Samuel Valley would do things like fishing and getting tadpoles, and we had frogs, we had every animal in our house. And it's very strange for a Jamaican mother to allow animals in her house.
Really?
But she did. We were the collector of strays, and that included people too. But it was lovely, really, really lovely.
Did it make you think, or did you ever think about your family life when you're older and what that would look like and the kind of mum that you would be?
It didn't really involve children.
Mm-hmm.
And like my friends, my school friends can attest to this. When everyone found out I was pregnant, they were like, Jamelia, Jamelia's having a baby. Like, I'm the last person you would think would have a maternal bone in my body. Now, whilst I love children and I love being around them and stuff like that, I don't think anyone saw me as being a mom, least of all me.
How did you feel when you found out you were pregnant?
I was 19. So I think I was just ready. I don't know why. So I'd always said to myself, if you're having sex, then you might get pregnant. And that was
It's a good thing to say to yourself. Yeah. It's wise.
So it wasn't like, oh my gosh, my
How
life
did
is
this
over.
Happen?
Yeah, exactly. It was just kind of like, yeah.
Were you already like Jamelia, as we know Jamelia at that time?
So I found out I was pregnant on the day that I think I won my first MOBO award. So I was performing my first single. And even so, when I won the award, my mom was like, don't worry, at least you've got this to show for it. Because, and please don't think my mom is like some horrible person, but it was literally, I was pregnant at a time where in the music industry, if you get pregnant, you're out of here, you know, and that it was normal to get dropped. So I hid that pregnancy for quite a while. Sounds really weird saying that pregnancy, because that pregnancy is sat up there. She's 18 and she's amazing and the best thing that happened to me. But so it was a scary time, and it was kind of like just a given. Your life's over and, you know, you're not going to be singing anymore.
Isn't that interesting, though? Because I think for most people who get pregnant as a teenager,
yeah,
there is that thing of, we've all heard it, look, your life's over now.
Yeah, yeah. And people would say it to me explicitly.
Really?
Even after I had Tasia, people would come up to me in the street and say, you know, what have you gone and done that for? And luckily for me, my mum had me as a teenager. My mum had me when she was 17. And so she was the one person that was like, this doesn't mean your life's over. You can do whatever you want. And, you know, she was very extremely supportive, and I'd say a huge motivation in me continuing forward and having the audacity to still go after my music career. And my most successful years in the music industry was after having a child.
Did you feel a pressure during your pregnancy to keep going, as to like prove that you could still do it?
Not really. I just kind of felt like, it's not going to happen. And then it was after I had her that, you know, my mom was like, well, why does this mean it's over? Can't you sing? You can sing, can't you? Jamaicans are very to the point, like that. You know, it's no kind of, oh, darling, no, we don't do that. And it was kind of like, oh, yeah, that's true. And then, yeah, I got in touch with the record label and they were like, yeah, whenever you're ready. And I was surprised at that as well.
How long did you leave it?
About 6 months. So I had Tasia in March. So I actually started recording on September the 11th. And the Twin Towers happened, and I was like, it's a sign. And so I ran back home and didn't record again until about a year later.
Really?
Yeah, I was really shook up by that. I thought it meant you're not supposed to leave your baby. And so, yeah, I went back home.
What was that first labour like and meeting Tasia?
Do you know what? It was so relaxed. Really? I was so ready to meet her. It was beautiful. It was lovely. And a far sight from the second one. That's what I'd say. it was blissful. I had an epidural. That's a huge part of it as well. But listen, I remember that she was born while I was watching Jerry Springer. I was so chilled out. And it was just like, okay, now I'm a mum. You know, when you're younger, I feel like you don't really question yourself. You don't really pressure yourself. And I just kind of feel like I wish I was like that in December 2017 when I had my third. And yeah, I'm still pressuring myself.
Well, that's an interesting thing though, because you had the two.
Yeah.
And then there's a big gap and then you had a third.
Yes. Yeah, a big gap.
Yeah.
All right. So I had Tasia when I was 20, and then my last daughter, I had her at 36. And my gosh, I think there's some sort of amnesia that happens, because I was just like, have I really done this? Because if I have, why would I do it again? Like, it was just, and I'm saying it was as if it's past tense. I'm still going through it. I'm still dealing with, you know, having a baby. I mean, she's throwing herself on the floor now, and I'm just like, oh, I can't be bothered. But I genuinely can't. It's just, and we're all like that as well. Because, and I've got two lovely teenagers who are more than happy to help out, and a husband. And my husband's like yours. It's 50-50. There's no, you're not babysitting. You're not helping me out. We did this, so we're going to do this.
You were there.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But yet the experience is just so different. It's such a different experience. And I don't know if it's because I'm older. I don't know if it's because it's a different time. I don't know if it's because we're saturated with information and Instagram and social media.
That's an interesting thing, isn't it? So back when you had Tasia, you can kind of, you're making it up as you go along.
Absolutely.
Whereas now you post something and it's like, oh no, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. And that's it. And it's really hard to... I'm already dealing with this, and then I've got to not fight, but it's like I have to deal with like comments and stuff like that, to the point where I just don't post anything anymore. The other day I complained that all the girls' clothes are pink, and so I buy boys' clothes for her because she's playing and she's getting dirty, and I feel like pink clothes make girls feel the need to keep prissy and neat, and I'm just like, I don't want that for her. I want her to feel as if she can climb and get dirty and get messy. Oh my gosh, the comments. I had to turn the comments off. It was ridiculous. I was really? Just like, why is that such a big issue? And I just kind of feel like I'm a little bit reluctant. I get a bit scared when posting baby-related stuff.
Well, the interesting thing as well, I think, is that in that gap, things would have changed.
Oh my gosh,
so guidelines. Did you put Tasia down on her front?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there were so much. So even the change between Tasia and my second daughter. So my second daughter was born 5 years later. Things changed then. And then things have changed again. She has to now go on her front, or the swaddling. I mean, my baby doesn't like it. She hated it. Absolutely hated it. it is literally a minefield, isn't it? Because it's not only, you're not only tapping into your own kind of mothering instincts, you have to deal with advice and unsolicited advice and professional advice and Instagram advice and YouTubers, which I love. But then I'm like, oh, that means I'm doing it wrong. Or she looks like, you know, look how clean her house is. And it's like, you know, you try and follow like the cleaning tips. And when the baby goes down, you do this. And it's like, okay. And then it's like, no. No, this doesn't work.
It is, I think, is that ignorance is kind of bliss.
It is. It
and
is.
You would, but you would have had pressure.
Yeah.
Like with your first pregnancy because yep. you had to do your thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I think... So the pressure was very different, I think, and it was literally coming from record execs that you have to slim down, you have to look like someone who has not had a baby. I mean, but I have. Yeah. And again, I was younger, so, you know, and now it's just kind of like, I dare you to tell me something about my, you know, my
scary
weight. Or...
when it must be scary when you're in, that's your job, mm. and you've got someone, I know I have a friend who, mm. her manager would literally... rub her thighs and be like, got to sort that out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that is and was the experience. And I think you just accepted it. But one of the things that I think is great now is that if something like that happened, we'd talk about it, we'd hear about it. And I think that is one of the fantastic things about social media, being able to put certain conversations on the table. And I really appreciate people who are honest, and I really appreciate, and I love seeing kind of people banding together and, you know, making real change. Mm. And normalizing stuff as well. One of the, there was a maternal mental health week.
Yep.
And I'd only just heard about it on the off chance. And I was literally, yeah, in a pretty bad way, I would say. And I started posting just... I feel like this, and this is what's happening, and this is what I do if this is happening. And so many people engaged with it, and I was just like, oh, my gosh, thank God for that. Like, literally, thank God for that. And there's power in sharing, yeah. and even if you are the sharer, to receive people kind of normalizing it, even a comment, you don't understand how much a comment can literally raise your spirits, and sometimes I use social media for that as well, just to, you know, make me feel a little bit better. During Maternal Mental Health Week, I was doing these posts and also kind of researching maternal mm-hmm. mental health. And I realized that I was actually suffering with postnatal depression or postpartum depression. And I went to my GP and I told her, and she was just like, yeah, you know, this is completely normal. You know that so many people are going through it. Had I not engaged or did that on Instagram, I wouldn't have known something so important. I would sometimes be literally looking at my family and just being like, oh, they don't like me. You know, they don't like me, and they'll be much better off if I'm not here. Literally watching them and look at them, they're laughing, and they wouldn't be laughing if I was there. And I just didn't know what that was. I don't even know how to explain it. But something about the engagement that I got from those posts made me go to the GP and then subsequently have a conversation with my family. And
that's the thing with mental health, mm-hmm. because it can creep up on you.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And you have a happy home environment.
Yeah, yeah.
When Tasia was first born. Oof. Well, I mean...
yeah, yeah, yeah. No, let's talk about it. Yeah. I'm not afraid to talk about it at all. So before I was pregnant with Tasia, I was in a domestically abusive situation with her father. And the reason why I left that relationship is because he hit me when I had her in my arms. And I just thought, do you know what? It wasn't okay. It was never okay. But my thinking at that time, as a 20-year-old girl, my first relationship, my thought was, it was okay when it was just me, but are you really going to make this decision for your baby as well? She was newborn. She was about 4 weeks old. I just thought, I have to go. And I literally packed up her stuff and left. And then even that wasn't an easy thing to do. But, making that decision, it was the best decision I could have ever made. For
But the strength that would have taken at that time.
I don't know how I did it. I could hardly, get out of bed when I had True. True's my youngest baby. Sometimes we do have to pat ourselves on the back to look back and think, you did that when your baby was 4 weeks old.
And also, how long would you have stayed in that relationship had it not have been for Tayshia coming into her life?
Absolutely. And that's something that I, you know, I think about a lot. I've always believed that children are a blessing, you know, and their timing is, it's never a coincidence, you know. And yeah, she came at the perfect time. And as I said, changed my life in so many ways. Even when it came to my work ethic, you know, having a reason, you know, I was an inner city teenager who didn't really see myself like being famous or being someone who worked in the public eye. Honestly, I thought I was going to work in the corner shop. That was my actual dream. It really was. It was John Shop, and that's where I was going to work. But then
you realised you had a really good talent.
Well, somebody else did, to be honest. But you know, and then you know, yeah, somebody kind of gives you the idea or the validation that, do you realize you could actually do this? You could change your life. You could change your whole trajectory by tapping into this talent and working hard and putting in the effort to rehearse. And again, like having literally a person watching you. That's what she does. Tayshia was my little tag along at
she's
the time.
She's still watching
yeah,
you
she's
now.
She's still watching me.
Come on, Tayshia, give us some pace.
But yeah, and I mean, everywhere I went, Tayshia came with me and was literally watching me. And it was kind of like, you have to be successful. You've got this little girl and you could change your life, her life. And even who she has become as a young woman today is a true testament to the influence and motivation that she brought into my life. Yeah. Yeah.
And I just think, thank you for sharing. Oh. Because you think of the people that are in those situations that feel trapped.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually stepping out of it is the first step to a new life and freedom.
It is, and it's a very, very hard step. And I mean, I even wrote a song about it, and because I felt that it's so important for us to talk about it. If any of you are familiar with me, you'll know that I've got a big mouth. And
I don't know what you're talking about, Jamelia. You're not one to share your opinion.
But I think it's really important. I think honesty is so important because that's how we bring about change. And at the time that I wrote Thank You, you know, people weren't talking about domestic abuse. And I just thought it was so in my head. And I don't even know how it became that way. But in my head, it was normal. In my head, it was okay to be getting battered. That's ridiculous.
I read a headline where it said that you were literally doing Top of the Pops and then going home and getting a beating.
Yeah, literally. And that was my normal, and I accepted it as my normal. And this is what I'm saying. There are so many people in those types of situations. Some people don't even realise it. Mm. I wasn't really, you know, I just kind of thought I just need to be better behaved, or I just need to do this, I just need to do that. And really, you know, I was with someone who had a serious problem. And again, I'm now 38. I'm much older. I'm much wiser. And even looking back at that person, I just kind of feel like it's important for me to continue to tell this story so that if anyone listening hears my story, that hopefully they are kind of shown that there can be a light at the end of the tunnel.
And it's worth more.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. People are only abusive if they have a problem. Do you know what I mean? It has nothing to do with you. It's not about you. And there's nothing that you can do that can change that situation. So you have to think about your self-worth and why you are important to you. Yeah. No.
What were those early days like with Tayshia once you'd left that relationship?
Do you know what? I'm not going to lie. I mean, I did feel the sudden rush immediately after she was born. And you know, I felt that with all of my
That's
children.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. It's okay.
and people always say to me, oh my gosh, you're obsessed with your children. I'm like, yeah, I am. They're literally my best friends, which is probably hugely problematic, but they are. The bond that we have I mean, it's still there, so she still wants to come out with me. Like, mm-hmm. you know, this is our girly night out. We have mother and daughter dates and stuff like that. But those first days after that point, I literally felt invincible. I felt like I could, I can, and I should. In that time, I remember him saying to me, "You're never going to be anything without me." Do you know how inspiring those words are? You know, and I don't live my life in a place of revenge or look at me now. I genuinely don't feel like that, but it's just kind of like, you don't own me and you never, ever will. And so for me, it's about creating. I just want to live in a world of beautiful things, and I want to create that for my children as well. And so it's so important to me to kind of chase and seek happiness at all costs. And it's not about revenge. It's not about looking into the past and saying, you know, I completely forgive him. I think, you know, I think he's a weirdo, but and my reason for forgiving him is because I don't want to hold on to that kind of pain. I don't want to carry that with me at all. So the best thing for me to do is forgive, and also I get to really enjoy all of the amazing things that my children have become. And it's going to sound like such a weird thing to say, but maybe if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be so, I don't know, hell-bent on achieving greatness and happiness for me and my kids. Mm. Yeah.
But isn't it strange that coming out of, so now having True.
Yeah, yeah.
That you've got postnatal depression when actually you're in a really happy place.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is it. I mean, this relationship.
Are you going to get gushy on us?
I mean, I couldn't have dreamt him. I genuinely couldn't have even, you know, if I was to, I don't know, write on a piece of paper my dream man, he still exceeds that. Oh, gosh, I'm just going to sound like such a soppy git, but he's just so amazing. But at the same time, I feel that even my postnatal depression probably comes from a place of trauma kind of building up. I've had a lot of trauma in my life, and I think a lot of trauma that I haven't dealt with. My mom was a single parent, and single parents, I think, have this whole, I can do it by myself, carry on. And I was a single parent for over 9 years. And so having that experience, even, you know, getting married and having a baby with someone and having someone change the nappies and someone saying, you know, babe, just go to sleep. He's just like, oh my God. You know, it's literally like I've won the lottery. So even that, I had to get used to sharing parenting duties, someone else doing the school run, that everything wasn't on my back. You know, I'm not even sure if people do really speak about this, but the transition of going from a single parent to a parent in a loving relationship is a really weird one, because it's like you're really happy, but you're also like, can I rely on this person? You know, can I let go? And it's still happening, you know, now, even just kind of like leaving the house today. It's kind of like, oh my gosh, I just get to just put my heels on and leave.
Well, yeah, is that,
you know, literally.
Well, because I guess before True came along as well, your husband was stepping into that father role.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And so I had a very traumatic pregnancy with True. My waters broke at 23 weeks. And it was, as I said, I've had so much trauma in my life, going, you know, from childhood, not having a father around, and just so many different things happening. And then being in a great relationship, but then a kind of motherhood trauma that I'd never experienced before. Motherhood was always something that I was very confident about. And then, you know, to have your waters break and to be totally out of control of whether or not this baby is going to survive. Literally every day for 13 weeks, it's literally like the baby was hanging on a thread in front of you, and it's like, oh, today. When your waters break early, they don't just break once, they break over and over again. And so, you know, I was hospitalized several times. I got sick. And even just things like, you know, I can't do the school run. I was on bed rest. And then when she was born, she was about 5 weeks old and she stopped breathing for 4 minutes. It was horrific. The worst thing that ever happened to me. And the reason why I say that is because And this is something that I want to urge everyone, if you, especially if you've got a newborn or, you know, even just a baby, child, whatever, please do first aid training. Because when my daughter stopped breathing, I didn't know how to help her. And I cannot explain to you how traumatic the experience of your child literally dying in front of you and you being unable to resuscitate them because you just don't know. And it's so easily learned. The reason why I say it's so important to learn is because the trauma of that day is still with me now. I can't send her to nursery. I can't be apart from her. I literally stayed awake for 4 weeks, which, you know, started a whole other set of problems. But so there was a lot of issues around my pregnancy. And again, to even go through that and to be so fiercely supported and looked after was strange to me, because as a single parent, and any single parents here will know, if you're sick, you're just sick and you just get on with it. And, you know, and so even to be looked after was something that took a lot of getting used to. I felt guilty for not being able to take my children to school. I had really bad morning sickness. Gosh, I'm a real poster child for pregnancy, aren't I? but even like my morning sickness meant like I couldn't take my children to school and stuff like that. And also,
going into it again, having had two, you feel like you know what you're letting yourself in for.
Absolutely. I was like, oh, yeah, pregnant again, cool, I got this. I did not got this. It was honestly horrific. And, you know, it was horrific to the point where kind of like I made the decision, I am never having another child again. I've since changed my mind recently, but he hasn't, so.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I think it's something that's come up while doing the live shows as well. We always kind of take the mickey out of men in those situations.
Yeah.
But it must be so hard to see the person you love going through something traumatic like you did, or even straightforward childbirth, knowing that they are helpless.
Exactly. It is. And I think we do need to appreciate the men and what men go through in that scenario. Oh, can I just tell you another little thing?
You can tell me whatever you like. I'm listening.
Because I just want to make it sound as awful as possible. I went into labour on the day. Do you remember when we had that crazy snow and everything stopped?
Yeah.
So, and, sorry, I have... we should turn this into like a film or something. Tasia was having a sleepover, so she had five friends at the house as well, and I was like, guys, we're gonna have to go. One of her friends was googling how to deliver a baby. I went into labor, and then we had to walk to the train station, and it was an absolute, me and five kids, and I was like, you know, calling the parents, can you come and pick your child up from the hospital, the delivery suite. But that being said, you know, I don't want to scare anyone, because despite all of that, I genuinely would do it again. Not that particular thing, but, you know, I would go there again. But the trauma that, you know, I think my husband went through. I get it. I understand, you know.
I mean, I do think it's not that surprising that you suffer with postnatal depression.
Yeah, me too. Exactly. Yeah.
That's a lot for someone to go through.
Yeah, no, definitely. And again, you know, it's even that kind of feeling allowed to feel quite crappy. And it's not something that you just get over it overnight. But you do get over it. And I think... for me, I found an incredible amount of, it's not necessarily support, because these people don't know they're supporting me, but being able to go online and on social media and see other people experiencing the same things, or recommending websites or people, or I don't know, all of these things have helped. And I'm truly thankful for that.
And I imagine part of it as well is feeling like you've almost failed in some way.
Oh my gosh.
Like that irrational thought that this is, I've failed her.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people talk about motherhood guilt and stuff like that, and it just doesn't go away. And even now, like True is almost two, and I still feel that I overcompensate with her. I feel like, oh my God, I have to make sure she's happy at all times, and that, you know, I'm literally Mary Poppins. I'm like, yay, you know, jumping out of bed, yay, I'm knackered, but it's just like, yay, you know, it's another day. And but again, I also feel that dealing with postnatal depression, it's going to sound like such a weird thing to say, but I feel like my children have been fantastic for me, you know, having that reason to get up, having that reason to, you know, even having to change a nappy, and those responsibilities have kind of, in a weird way, kept me grounded. You know, I've lived with depression anyway, mm-hmm. and I don't know if my children weren't here, I don't know if I would still be here. Like, I really doubt I would have been. And so when it comes to postnatal depression itself, I mean, even this weekend, I had a really, really terrible episode. And I was like, really, like, you know, maybe I shouldn't be here. But then the toddler comes in and, mum, that's all she says. She doesn't say anything else. And then it's like, you know, she wants a book and it's like, okay. And then she wants a different book, and then she wants to throw herself on the floor for no reason. What, you know, then she wants to, I don't know, eat some Sellotape, and you're just like, oh, we can't really. And then it's kind
and
of
then
like...
she has a tantrum because you can't Sellotape away. You're really exactly. A nasty mum. Yep,
exactly,
yep.
Exactly. And it's just kind of like... I love that kids just don't care. I actually love that. I love how honest they are. I love that they let you know, I need you and I want you and I want this and I need this. And I kind of feel like we could learn a lot from our children, demanding what we want, be brutally honest. Because you have to think, babies are happy all the time, most of the time. If they get what they want, they're happy. And it's like, because they tell you, I want that, you know.
What's it like having a baby with teenagers in the house? I bet they're really helpful, aren't you? Thumbs up. Yeah, she is.
Honestly, you know, people always think, oh, yeah, you got babysitters on deck. And it's like, yeah, kind of. I actually homeschool my 13-year-old.
How did that come about?
Trauma. Should we just say trauma?
Really?
It's... that whole anxiety about, you know, the school run and stuff like that. And then my daughter was going through it as well. And, you know, she hated school. She wasn't having that experience. And I just thought, why force her into an environment that she doesn't want to be in every single day, over and over again? And it got to the point where, you know, she was having mental health issues at 11. And I was just like, do you know what? Come home. You know, you need your mummy, you know. And I mean, it was also around the time that True was born as well. And it was the best decision that I made, because she's so much happier. She just needed her mummy. And I think that when a baby is born, we, you know, we're very careful about other toddlers or children that are around, you know, under the age of 9, I'd say. But when it comes to like teenagers, you're like, no, they'll be fine. They still want their mummy. Like, you know, even at 18, like, you know, I've noticed my eldest daughter, like, I've noticed that we still need to spend that time. We still need to bond. Like, it's very important to them.
Is because I think when babies need you, it's one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But when they get older and the problems are bigger, yeah. Like dealing with anxiety.
Exactly.
That must be really heartbreaking.
Oh, my gosh. Very heartbreaking, actually. And I think...
because you can't just take it away. You can't distract.
No, not at all. I think, and again, you know, there's a huge conversation to be had about teenagers and mental health, especially in this day and age with social media and how they build their own sense of identity whilst immersing themselves in constant messaging on you should look like this and the Kardashians. And, you know, they are seeing these images, and especially as young black girls as well, they're not quite often seeing themselves represented. So it's like it has to be kind of like a conscious seeking of, and I have to help them with that. I have to help my children navigate their way around, you know, social media or online content. I can't just leave my child to go and watch YouTube. I have to make sure that what she's receiving and what she's internalizing, I think, is really important. And in our household, we are very open about our mental health. We have a little code. It's not going to be a code anymore because everyone knows it. But it's like, would you like to have a chat? You know, and then it's not necessarily a cold, but it's just kind of like, you know, or I need to have a chat. And that's literally, or would you like a hug? Like those kind of things are, I'm feeling like I've got an issue with my mental health. That's basically what that translates as. And I'm glad that I've suffered with depression because I get to have open conversations with my daughters about it. I let them know I completely understand. I let them know that how you feel is valid. I think a lot of the time, especially with teenagers, we can be like, you know, wait till you get to 30, you know, you don't know yourself yet. But I think we have to appreciate and acknowledge that whatever they're going through is legitimate. And to you, it might just be a spot, and to them, it's a huge deal. And I think we have to just be careful, and as careful as we are with our toddlers, to kind of just be easy and allow them to express themselves. I think teenagers still throw tantrums, but just in a different way. Mm-hmm. And but I think you deal with it quite similarly.
Well, isn't it that thing with babies, they vocalize it and you know straight away, whereas I imagine with teenagers they can internalize it, which is actually more terrifying.
Oh my gosh, it really is. It really is. And that's why, you know, we have, it's very important to me that we have mental health, speaking about mental health is on the table. When I was diagnosed with postnatal depression, the first thing I did was we're going to have a family meeting. It was a very hard family meeting. But again, we live in a time where we can Google things, and it's like, you know, even postnatal depression, it was kind of like if I couldn't articulate something, then we can watch a video on it or research, and it's been really helpful.
Did it bring you all closer together at a time where you were feeling further away from them?
I think so. I think that I think when you're dealing with mental health issues alone in your home, which a lot of us do, I was for months, it's like you're creating a gap. But then when you're open about it and you feel open about it, it's, I don't know, it's like a sense of release, but it's also letting people in. And it's very important that you let your family in. It's very important that you ask for help. The other day, well, I took a day. I was just like, you know what? I'm out of here. And I literally just left the house. And then when I came back, I was like, listen, I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm finding this really hard. And it really helped. And
It's important that we do that, isn't it? Because I think in terms of relationships as well, it can just build up and up and up, and that resentment then builds up, that anger. Before you know it, you're kind of just at boiling point or breaking point, and
so
you have
true.
To kind of vocalise it.
Yeah. I 100% believe in communicating and over-communicating. I just feel that that's freeing, and it might sound selfish, but I'm just like, I have to tell you that this is what's going on. I have to tell you that I'm finding that hard. I have to tell you that I just need to sleep for a little while longer. As I mentioned earlier, my husband is incredible. My children are incredible too, but my husband's more incredible. I mean, my children, they're teenagers, you know, sometimes it's like,
Well, what has been the toughest part for you? You've now had the newborn stage, you've had the toddler stage, you know, the part where they kind of, whatever, and then you've had the teenage, like, what is the most difficult bit?
So it was the day that my daughter, so my 13-year-old, it was the day that she made herself a sandwich. So let me just break it down. Okay, and it's going to happen to you. You laugh, but it's going to happen.
Okay.
So I pride myself on being that mom, you know, whatever you need, I got it, you know. And my daughter went and made herself a sandwich, and I've never cried so much because it was just like, she doesn't need me anymore. She can make her own sandwich. You have to think about it. Like, it means she can feed herself. And it was like such a huge moment for me. So, as I said, I was a single mom, and so that was my when I made my decision to start dating, because I was like, oh, they're gonna leave me. Literally, I'm not even joking.
What was in that sandwich?
It's probably like cheese and tomato, but it was still a sandwich. She didn't need me. She cut the bread herself. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, she used a knife. Like, I was just like, oh my gosh. And so I made the decision at that point that I need to start dating. And then I met my hubby. Yeah.
There's a whole thing about finding time for yourself and having that me time.
Yeah.
I literally think I've only found it this year.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think before that, I think because of having the kids and then work, I've been the busiest ever.
Of course.
I kind of feel like that time is almost selfish. which is ridiculous. Mum guilt just comes in and goes, no, you may not do that.
Yeah.
You may not, like, ease your mind.
I'm a very big, like, scheduler, which sounds really boring.
Scheduling in your phone.
And I kind of feel like that day, at least one day a month, I should have for myself. And I suggest it to my husband as well. You need to have that day to yourself. I think it's very important. And a day is rubbish, really. You know, I can't see us going on like a couple's holiday for now. So it's kind of like, yeah, you go off, I'll go off. You know, this is basically a date today. This is our date. We're on a date.
Please help, yeah.
Because I just don't get out much. I really, really don't. And I'm exactly the same as you. You know, we're both working from home. And so it's just kind of like literally work kids. And going out, it just seems like such an effort. So, yeah, getting ready today. I was actually quite excited. I was like, going to do my hair. Going to wear my heels, you know. But, yeah, so, yeah, we're on a date.
Well, I'm very happy to be your date partner. What has been the thing that has surprised you most about motherhood?
How often you move the goalposts. Being that, saying, you know, when I'm a mom, this is the type of mom. I mean, with True. So True's almost two, as I said, and she is born in the time of iPads and iPhones. And I hated being at restaurants or, you know, being in public places and seeing kids with iPads and stuff. And I was just like, when I was pregnant, I was like, there's no way my baby's going to be doing that. And da da da. We watch Moana about 3 times a day, the whole film. And I'm sorry, like, I make sure, you know, you make sure the device is charged just in case, because I just don't have time for the meltdowns. I don't know if I was a different person when I was 20, but the terrible twos are real. Like, oh my, I'm not even going to lie. Like, I'm in such shock at the moment. I'm just like, oh my gosh, in the supermarket, doing the Superman down the aisle. I'm like, come on, really? Really? And she's not really talking yet. So I also feel sorry for her because it's like, no, oh, it's just because you can't say what you mean. But yeah. And as I said, how often I move the goalposts. And that goes all the way up to, you know, my 13-year-old has been wanting to wear makeup since she was about 3. And, you know, and I was like, no way are you allowed to wear makeup until you're at least 16. And her birthday's coming up and I'm like, yeah, what can I get from Morphe? Let's go. And, you know, because it's just kind of like some things it's not worth the stress. Sometimes it's just making it easier on yourself. And other times you just want to be lazy. And I think that's also okay. I really do. I think it's okay. You've got to give yourselves a break sometimes.
You've got to pick your battles,
yeah,
haven't you?
Absolutely.
So does that thing actually matter?
Absolutely. Oh, and cooking everything from scratch. That's gone out the window. Oh, so gone out the window. Yeah.
Okay, final 3 sentences for you to complete. Being a mum means?
Means I can do anything else. Genuinely, I think if you achieve putting your child to bed whole, and even if it's not whole, if they're still breathing, that's you literally can do anything. There's nothing more challenging than being a mom. And so, yeah, it means that I can do anything else. Yeah.
Since having children,
I'm going to get really soppy, but I know my strength. I really do know my strength, what I'm capable of.
And I'm happy when
I am alone. No, I'm joking.
Nice twist at the end of the tour. honestly,
I am happy when I'm at home surrounded by my children, genuinely. And my husband. Got to drop him in there. Yeah. He's allowed.
Jamelia, you have been a joy to listen to. Thank you so much. Please give it up to Jamelia.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Walk off.
I'm coming with you. Don't worry.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Birmingham. You have been amazing. That's the end of the Happy Mum, Happy Baby Tour 2019. Aww. You've been incredible. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye, guys.